As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Stuck behind never-ending windows, all you need is a door. Searching for something to put a smile back on your face. Just remembering unusual times that can come from an unusual place. You need a partner for the ride, 'cause everybody needs a Clyde. So set your worries to the side. Pretend I got a hand I can lend, 'cause when you really need a friend, just ask. Shit 90 Shows taught me.
Shit 90 Shows taught me was not filmed before a live studio audience.
Welcome back to Shit 90 Shows Taught Me. I'm Jess Sterling, here with my co-host, Sarah Ferguson. Sarah, how are you?
Doing well. Got my butt cushion, got my matzah, you know, just gearing up for the Passover holiday. We are on day like 4 or something now, and just raging over here. I mean, I'm getting the wheat scaries, you know?
I actually have no idea what you're talking about.
Sure. It's like the Sunday scaries when like you're having the Sunday scaries, but it's like, oh, like haven't had wheat in 4 days, like about to have a mental breakdown.
I'm just going to slather my borscht on my matzah and call it a day.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're here talking Rugrats Passover. We've already covered the Hanukkah episode. So if you want to go back and listen to that with Mike Bloom, give it a listen. That was really fun. But today it's all about Passover here. And we've invited a very special guest on to talk Passover with us. We needed to outnumber the Catholics on this podcast, so we had to bring in another Jewish gal, our friend Sasha Joseph. Sasha, how are you?
Hi, y'all. I'm so good. This night really is different from every other night. So I am excited to be here, excited to talk all things Rugrats and Passover. I feel like my worlds are colliding, like podcasting and Judaism. Like, we love to see it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's very exciting. You're right. This night is different from other nights because I get to have two of my favorite lady podcasters on with me to talk about Rugrats Passover. It's so exciting. Sasha, let's talk Rugrats first and foremost. What's your history with Rugrats? What's your history with this particular episode of Rugrats, Rugrats Passover?
Yeah, I love Rugrats. I didn't realize how much I loved it till I was watching it back. And, like, you know, the iconic theme song started. And then I was like, da-na-na-na, you know, whatever. And I'm not going to hurt everyone's
with
ears with my
xylophone
singing.
Noises.
Yeah, I always like them, like, yes. Ba-da. Like, it's so good.
Yeah. Bow, 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 bow.
And then the milk squirt at the end. Yeah. Like, it was like, I forgot these things existed, but my brain didn't and my nostalgia didn't. So I was really into Rugrats, Nickelodeon in general, I think, as well. I even watched, believe it or not, the All Grown Up.
Yes.
Because I was like, what's going to happen to my favorite characters now? Because I think, yeah, in 90, because this particular episode, I think, came out in 95. So I was 4 when it came out. So it was like really part of, you know, what I was up to and what I was doing. And then my family, we're Indian. So we came to America a lot. And I think that's when I started watching Rugrats. And then it would get like this weird dub thing and get shown in India. So I was like, no, just show me the English one. Like, I don't want to like hear these babies like weirdly talk Hindi because you can see their mouths moving. So I've watched Rugrats for a long time. I love it. And, you know, of course, as a Jew, you know, this particular episode is really beautiful. And I work for a Jewish nonprofit. I have for the past 7 years. So it's a really nice like teaching mechanism, even though I work with teens now and I used to work with college students, and you'd still be surprised at how much you can use TV and especially these episodes as like a method of learning and teaching. So I am a big fan of this one and the Prince of Egypt, of course.
Yes,
where you could really like, I think, immerse yourself and get excited and learn, but it's not like on paper and you're like watching something nostalgic with learning. So love to see it.
Yeah, 100%. We like this one and the Hanukkah episode. I remember watching a lot around, you know, these times of year, every year when it was on Nickelodeon. And Prince of Egypt, Sarah and I had talked about covering that. I think we might be able to do it next year because we thought like we need to do the Rugrats like back to back, and then we'll save Prince of Egypt for another year. Because that one I also remember being, it's like, first of all, it's an excellent movie. And then it also to include, you know, Passover and just like representation matters. And to have that in a children's movie back in the day wasn't as, you know, common. So it really was like kind of like one of a kind at that point.
Yeah, I remember seeing A Prince of Egypt on Christmas in the movie theaters. And then we got this. And then we got our Chinese food after. But
of
like,
of course,
the most Jewish Christmas of all. But I love Prince of Egypt. I mean, the music is spectacular, the story is spectacular, it looks beautiful. I would love to cover Prince of Egypt in the future, so that would
be, oh my god, call me. I'm ready.
We
no
got
I think
you, girl.
Whitney and Mariah singing one song together, are you kidding me?
I know
we're blessed. It's just oh my god. And it's also, I think, the only one, right, with where I at least feel that the color is correct.
Yeah,
like they're not white.
Absolutely.
And
absolutely,
you know, they're actually Egyptians and Israelites and Hebrews, where, you know, they look like me, they're olive skinned. And that I think was another reason why I really like Prince of Egypt even over the Ten Commandments, which is like another movie, but V outdated, I feel. But Prince of Egypt stands to the, you know, test of time. Like, my husband, who's not Jewish even, was like, are we gonna watch that one movie? It's Passover. And I was like, yes, yeah, we will.
Yeah, and I was, even throughout this episode of Rugrats, I was comparing like the story of Passover from the Prince of Egypt with the Rugrats and be like, oh, I remember this happened to the Prince of Egypt and like this seems okay. And it's like, it's kind of sad, but also speaks to why, you know, representation in media is so important, is that I remember a Prince of Egypt storyline more than the dozens of times that I sat through a Passover Seder and the story. Because as much as it is a lovely experience to have your Seder, I mean, truthfully, I'm going to just say it outright. I'm Team Stew. Passover Seder is boring as heck.
See, and we're not even here yet, but I think about 15 times in my notes, I have, Stew is a dick.
Same.
Stu has a very realistic view on what Passover is.
I just think that, like, here, listen, like, if I'm coming in from an outsider perspective, my wife is Jewish, and I don't know, we don't know what, maybe Stu is Catholic or Christian, or, I mean, I think they celebrate Christmas, so I would assume, unless it's, again, anybody can celebrate Christmas, but we know he's not Jewish, and to me, coming in as an outsider, and then just completely ragging on your significant other's religion is that's not a great dick move. Like, even if you think it's boring, like, there's a lot of things that are boring, dude. Like, just get over it and, like, shush, like, be quiet about it. Let your wife celebrate her holiday, you know? Come on.
Yeah, and and what's the difference between him and Angelica? They literally have the same line. That there's no presence.
Yes.
And to me, that's the same all line you need.
3-year-old? Come on.
Yeah. And, like, a really mean 3-year-old.
I think, I mean, and to be honest, on Passover, potentially, I don't know, we'll get into traditions, but you have the potential to get money on Passover. So it's almost better than gifts.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
So
I also. Oh.
No, you go, Sasha.
I also wanted to just say, I agree that I think Seders can be boring, but I think just because of worked as a Jewish educator for so many years. I hosted, I think, 4, maybe? Yeah, I think 4. 100-plus person Seders.
Whoa.
I love how she's like, 400.
No, like, 4.
4, parentheses, sorry, 4.
Yes.
The number, yeah. 4.
The number,
yeah.
4.
Yeah.
And then I did it 4 times, rather.
Oh,
yes. 100.
God. Yeah. I'm like, no big deal. Just yeah. 400 no. people, my closest friends gathering.
Then I quit. Oh, my God, no. And, you know, to try to engage, like, college students year after year, yeah, you had to get so creative. Mm-hmm. And one of the big things, yeah, was, like, and, you know, I'm not going to make them watch a movie in the middle of a Seder. So, and everyone's there wanting the food, let's be honest. So,
oh, yeah.
So I agree that I think there's so many ways to make it more fun, more relevant, I would rather say. Mm-hmm. I think my biggest issue with Seder, and Seder literally means order. So, like, it's just, it literally just tells you what to do. That's, like, the point of it. And traditional Seders leave out women. Even the women are the reason for this whole thing to even happen. Because, and you know why. Because, right, like, it was written by a rabbi and, you know, da-da-da. And, like, mm-hmm. the women were in the kitchen at all times anyway. But but for me personally, like, I think that's my issue with Seders in general, where, like, we talk about freedom, we talk about liberation, but it's not, but it's for, sorry, a very select few.
Yep.
Where, you know, you're maybe your mom, and I'm obviously stereotyping, but, like, your moms or your, you know, sisters or the women in the house usually end up in the kitchen while the men are reclining, as you should for Passover. And where the women in the damn story, that's mm-hmm. the biggest issue, because with the Seder anyway, in this retelling where women actually, like, again, put the team on the backs, but don't really get mentioned, which is also funny because I feel like Dee Dee's also doing that. And Stu is, like, the counter to that. And then Boris, you know, poor Boris. Like, I know he gets locked. Spoiler alert. But, like, his wife is doing the cooking the whole time. So I was like, yeah, he gets to leave while she's just putting a Seder together. So... Yeah, that's my spiel.
I felt bad for Dee Dee because I was like, why doesn't she get to just say the Seder if Boris isn't there? Like, she's the one who's Jewish. Like, should
I think
she be allowed?
It's the patriarch of the house leads the Seder.
Oh, that's what it is. Okay.
I believe so. Now, when I was a kid, the policy was whoever, well, we had, so my, this is kind of what my Passover Seder looked like every year. We would go to my grandparents' house in Brooklyn, my mom's father and mother. They lived in Brooklyn. They're, like, you know, they are not too far off from what Boris and Minka look like. and then we would go, my uncle, who's my mom's brother, and his family would be there, which is, like, my aunt and my cousin. And then my family, so like my dad sometimes, because my dad traveled, and around Passover, that's when the baseball season starts. So he was probably not there more than he was there, but it'd be like my mother, my sister, and I. So our policy was that like my uncle kind of led the Seder, and me, as the youngest that spoke Hebrew, would get put in charge of saying all, like, everything, like the whole thing in Hebrew, which was a lot of pressure. And I'm going to keep, I said it before the podcast, I'm going to keep Passover positive. But it was a lot of pressure for a young kid who wasn't that great at speaking Hebrew. That's all I'm going to say. So, but the thing is that you have your Seder plate and you have your Haggadah, and it's like a whole thing. And then my family made like an abbreviated Haggadah, which is like not that abbreviated, to be honest with you. But it was always like Uncle Richie's like abbreviated Haggadah. It had like, it was pre-printed out. He like went to the Kinko's, got it printed out. It said like Richard's like Haggadah on it.
Oh, and I love this.
And yeah, like this is what our whole thing was. Like, this is what we did for many, many years. We would sit at that same table in Brooklyn and, you know, do the whole Passover Seder. It would be like 3 hours later and you finally got to eat. And it was that, I guess that's my biggest gripe, is that it is so basically, Jess, it's like you have to go through the entire story and why you're there and the four questions and like your Seder plate. You have to go through the whole thing. And like then like an hour into it, then you can have a sip of wine.
So is all the food like just sitting on the table this whole time that all of this is happening?
Well, it's like cooking.
Oh, well, yeah. Okay.
Yeah. No, I'm just, yeah, you usually, yeah, don't start.
I was just picturing, yes, everybody sitting at the table with like all the food out and then you're talking, I mean, for like 4 hours.
Essentially, you like, eat. You know, the good thing is that brisket needs, in my family, like the main course would be brisket, and brisket needs time. But yeah, you would have like literal glasses of wine or grape juice in my family. Mm-hmm. And then 5 hours later, you get to finally take a sip of grape juice. And then like a half an hour after that, you can finally have your first bite of matzah. And it's like, that's my gripe. Mm-hmm. As a girl that wants her food, wants her dinner.
That's fair.
Sasha, would you like to share what your Passover looked like growing up?
Yeah, growing up, I'm really like trying to remember. It was something my mom and I were trying to talk through before we came to this podcast. But it was very much, we went to synagogue in India and then, you know, just kind of like did a Passover. And then at home, I think we did the very basic, say the prayer to light the candle. And that was it. And, you know, I just can't remember doing a Seder in India. And it doesn't mean it didn't happen. I lived there till I was 14, but like, I truly just don't have that memory.
Right.
But interestingly, yeah, when I moved to America, I joined youth group and I ended up hosting my own Seder, you know, for work. And it's really interesting because I agree with you on all those gripes. And that's why I actually like made it to where you know, I would have eggs and matzah and some like snacks while the Seder was going on, so you wouldn't get bored and so that you wouldn't be so hungry while you're eating. Like, it's not the Seder plate. It would be just like side things to eat.
Yeah.
And we'd have wine because like, I think most of the time people get real turnt at these Seders because you're only supposed to have a sip, but usually people end up drinking the glass and then it gets refilled.
Yeah.
So to me, it's like, if you're going to do a Seder, don't drink and drive, of course, everything in moderation, but Jews, I feel like, truly believe, because they say wine marks joy in Judaism, so, like, wine shows up a lot in these, like, joyous moments. So, like, you do you, man. And I hope, Sarah, that you're next year, you know, you abridge your Seder now. Yeah. But
maybe that's what the thing is. I haven't had a real Seder since I was turned 21. Like, my last, like, real full Seder was when I was a kid. or like not a kid, but like a teenager. So maybe that's my problem. Maybe it's that I didn't get drunk at Passover.
Yeah. Like, I mean, what's a holiday without some adult beverages, right? Like, I know about that. You know, like everybody has a holiday with beverages. So I feel like you just like hosted your own, like you do your own thing. Yeah. That's what's great about being an adult. You get to form your own traditions, and like no one is saying that, oh, you have to do X, Y, Z this way now. You can kind of like do what you want, right? Like, yes, I still hold some traditions that my family had for various holidays and just in life in general, but we also adapted some that we didn't really like for whatever reason. But yeah, that's nice.
So what do you know about Passover, Jess? Like, what's like the cliff notes?
What I know was basically, I mean, I knew basically the story as Rugrats told it, because that and Prince of Egypt was how I knew anything about Judaism.
Yeah.
Really.
Which is actually great. Yeah.
I grew up in a very, like a little bit of background on me. I kind of went into it on the Rugrats Hanukkah episode, but I grew up Catholic. I went to Sunday school. My family was not super religious. I mean, both sides of my family are Catholic, but by the time it reached me, it was kind of like, we don't really, like, we celebrate the holidays. We don't really go to church. I stopped going to Sunday school when I was fairly young. I don't follow any of it now. I do not consider myself a religious person, but that's kind of like the background that I grew up with. So obviously I celebrate Christmas and Easter and, you know, those types of Christian holidays. In my town where I grew up, it very much is like, there's freaking Christian churches everywhere you look. A lot of Catholic churches. So there's not a lot of diversity where I grew up. A lot of white people and a lot of Catholics. So I didn't grow up with that exposure. Obviously, I know like what Judaism is, and it's one of like the main religions that you learn about in school. So what I know about Judaism is basically what I learned probably in like eighth grade social studies and what I learned on Rugrats. So the cliff notes version of what I know about it is that there's a Pharaoh and there's Moses, and Pharaoh is like a real bad dude and he's really mean and he's really not nice to the Hebrews. Because he wants them to be slaves of the Egyptians. And all these babies were killed. They're like first sons of all of the Hebrews.
Oh, sorry. I laughed because I was thinking like you were just starting to recap the Rugrats episode.
Oh, all the babies in Rugrats die?
Yeah. Like, because they kept, instead of saying like Hebrews, well, because they called them babies. Thing, they were like babies.
Yeah.
So I apologize. No, that is true. Yes. And it's not funny. No,
but it is funny when you think about it that way. But yeah. So like all the Hebrews were forced to send their first sons into like the Nile River, but there was a baby named Moses and he was saved in a basket. The Pharaoh finds Moses. This is where I have some questions, because the way the show portrays it is kind of weird. So like, does the Pharaoh find Moses as a baby and like raise him as his own?
No, unfortunately not. according to the Torah, at least, it's Pharaoh's sister, I believe, or daughter. Anyway, her name's Batya, and she is the one that end up draws Moses from the water. And I think Moses literally means like drawn from the water or taken from the water. I can't exactly remember, but and Batya was the one who actually took Moses. And I was like trying to find it in my notes, that I have over when I teach about Passover, but I believe that Pharaoh knew that Moses was, a Jew or a Hebrew. But I think it was one of those like nature versus nurture. I believe that, nurture will be fine. I don't know that it was such a big shock.
Got
that
it.
He was.
Yeah, because in the show, Hebrew. It's like they take off his thing and it's like, oh, my God, like, don't let him see your Hebrew.
Yeah, and even in Prince of Egypt, right, like it's this shock. But yeah, I believe they say that everyone kind of knew of this because Moses' mom, Yocheved is her name, actually like breastfeeds Moses.
Okay.
When Batya draws him from the water, he was like, obviously she knew because he's wrapped in the blanket. of that, you know, the Hebrews or the enslaved people had. So she knew exactly what was going on. She drew him from the water, and then she, Miriam, Moses' sister, was actually following him through to make sure that he, you know, was safe, or, you know, making sure he was not getting eaten in the Nile or drowned. So Miriam actually, like, says, you know, hey, I know someone that can help take care of him. Do you want that, to Batya? And yeah, Moses' mom actually breastfeeds him as, like, you know, kind of like a help or a favor to to Batya and, like, the family or the royal family, however you want to say it.
Interesting. Yeah, so that was the one thing that I wasn't super clear on, because, like, obviously it's tough when they have the babies portraying these roles. It's a little bit more difficult to really understand the true story. But I love that, like, I do think that, like, you kind of get the gist of the story from a 20-minute episode of a cartoon. Like, you kind of understand most of the story, at least. And, I mean, obviously there's stuff left out, like what you're talking about with Seder and all the different foods. Like, some are mentioned in passing, but I'm sure there's, like, a ton more that isn't exactly explored, because you do only have 20 minutes in the show. But I love the opening scene of, like, Angelica just, like, chilling in the car, just, like, spreading is it borscht on matzah? Is that what she's doing in her little?
I think it's jam, right?
I thought it was jam. I thought it was jam as well.
I saw the word borscht on something, so maybe that wasn't it.
I mean, she could have, but that's traditionally not what you would put on matzah. Like, I mean, you could put butter on matzah. You could put jam on matzah. Mm-hmm. You can make, I mean, when I was a kid, what we often did was do peanut butter and jelly sandwiches with matzah, which is a traditional lunch during Passover, because the whole thing is that you can't have you can't have anything with yeast in it, so you can't have anything that, like, rises. And, you know, it's essentially it's that as the Jews are fleeing Egypt, they didn't have enough time to let the bread rise, so when they baked it, it became flat.
Right, and that's what Chucky did, right? Chucky forgot. Mm-hmm. I think it was in the story, Chucky forgets the yeast, and so they're all, like, super flat. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Which is a cute way of telling that story.
Yeah, yeah. So that's why we don't have, like, bread or, like, pasta or, like, anything that's, like, you know, it's called not kosher for Passover. So Parv, P-A-E-R-V-R-E.
P-A-R-V-E, yeah, parv, yeah.
So matzah's, like, not that bad. I mean, sometimes you can get it for free at the shop, right, if you spend over $50.
Can you really? They do deals like that around Christmas and Thanksgiving as well. Like, you get a free turkey if you spend enough money, and you get a free, like, ham. Yeah. Or they have substitutes as well if you're not into meat. Like, you get tofu or something.
So you get your 5-pound box. It lasts you for the entire year.
Yeah,
then you just do it again the next year.
It usually expires right before Passover the next year, which is, like, the amazingly travesty.
Amazingly so. Egg matzah. Have you ever had egg matzah? Because actually, that's really good.
Yeah, I have, and it's almost like wannabe French toast, like, kind of, and then I do matzah pizza a good amount of times.
Yeah.
I keep kosher in life, as in, like, I eat kosher meat, so I don't keep kosher for Passover. It's, like, my own weird conviction. Don't ask me why.
No, it makes sense.
But I was like, I do K for life. Like, I can't be K for P all the time. Mm-hmm. But also, because I'm such a picky eater. But yeah, it's matzah pizza is, like, the one thing that I'll be like, I'll give up pizza and eat matzah pizza instead. And it's not so hot. It really is not. But, you know, it's a compromise.
I think Sasha's just like, I may think matzah pizza, but don't eat it. It's not that great.
No, that's pretty much it. Yeah.
Bake it. It's just, matzah is like, I think non-Jews like matzah more than Jews do.
Yeah.
And it's just really funny.
Well, it's probably just
because
they don't have to eat it all the time.
Exactly.
So it's, yeah, that makes sense to me. Yeah.
Have you ever heard of soft matzah, Sasha?
No. What?
There's this soft matzah recipe that came up, and it actually looks really good. It kind of looks like a naan or like a pita bread.
I love naan. I actually like making pizza with naan. Oh, it's so good.
Interesting.
I think that you and I should try this. Get back to each other and see.
Let's.
Yeah.
I know. I need to. I'm cooking matzo ball soup tonight anyway, so we'll let y'all know.
There you go.
That's the one Ashkenazi food that I'm into. Everything else, I was like, where's your spices at? But matzo ball soup is like really.
Yeah. Let's get into that quickly as we're arriving almost at the...
Yeah, because they're making matzo ball soup at Borzminka's house.
So a traditional fare at Passover at my house would have been you got your starters of your gefilte fish, unfortunately. You got your... liver, your chopped liver. You got your horseradish. So you got all of that.
Like horseradish, then, like as like a sauce on the side?
You would have it, number one, it's on the Seder plate. Okay. But number two, it also is something that you can put on your matzah. So that's what people do.
Okay.
Spicy matzah.
It really clears everything.
I would imagine. I mean, I've had like horseradish mayo, but not like straight up horseradish. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then you would have your matzo ball soup. That was something that we had. I think we typically also had some sort of like garden salad at my house. And then you would have brisket and vegetables. And I think that was pretty much what I remember the most, because you can't have your kugel because it's noodles, so you can't have that. And then as far as dessert, there was always like kosher for Passover desserts that you would get at the local bakery.
The macaroons.
Oh my God. So macaroons, my first introduction to macaroons is not like the pretty French like pastries. Which are like, I guess you call them macarons, but like my ass calls them macaroons. But so macaroons are Satan's cookie because they are like little, they're basically just shredded coconut in a ball with some sort of like cookie.
Are they legitimately known as the devil's cookie, or did you just?
No. You just don't believe in the devil.
I know that, but I was like, what are you talking about?
In my mind. So, no, they're just like little like balls of like shredded coconut and like grossness. And then sometimes they're like dipped in chocolate and sometimes they're not. I don't know. I don't like them at all.
I don't know if I've honestly ever had a macaroon. I know what a macaron is. They're the ones that look like little sandwiches. But I don't know.
Do you like coconut?
I like the cookies that the Girl Scouts sell that have it on there.
So maybe you would like
it. I like Almond Joys. So yeah, maybe.
Oh. No, they're just a special kind of just a mess.
I love like, it's like all the foods we get to eat, you're like, well, they're really not that good though.
Yeah.
No, some, like I said, matzo ball soup is number one fire. Yeah. Like brisket, I'm not a super fan, but like I think it tastes good, I want to say. But yeah. I think, unfortunately, that's kind of it. There's these, like, black and white cookies. Yeah.
Oh, I've had those.
That are also a thing.
Oh, black and whites. Yes, of course. Those are great.
I don't know what they're, like, actually called.
I think that's what I know them as well, are black and white cookies.
Yeah. Latkes is a good Jewish food, but you don't traditionally have them.
I love latkes. My mom would make, they're potato pancakes, right? Yeah, my mom would make potato pancakes with applesauce every once in a while.
That's what you do for Hanukkah, but you don't traditionally get latkes for Passover. So, Sasha, do you want to share what your traditional Passover food would be?
Yeah. So, again, I'm an Indian Jew. So, Bene Israeli Jews, which is like Jews from Mumbai, where I am from, we usually end up eating a lot of just Indian food because thank God. One, Indian food mostly is gluten-free, right? Like, which is kind of the measurement of everyday food. So there's a lot of, like, soups as well. But my grandma makes this most fire soup with, like, this. I'm sure every Jewish family has, the like, that soup mix from the, like, the Jewish store.
I know what you're talking Israeli. About. I know what you're talking yeah. about. It's with in a yellow red, container with a yes, red top.
Yep. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. I know her.
Yeah. So, you know, with that soup, with like some garam masala, of course, and a little bit of Indian flair. So we did a lot of that. And something for Passover, I think, again, my grandma's, because like my grandparents, like family, or sisters and brothers would also cook. And it would be this green curry chicken, like was our Passover thing with it's technically like a dosa crepe, but, you know, it doesn't rise. It's made out of specific things with dates. Like, that's also another piece of it. And, of course, the Seder plate is pretty standard. It's literally written in the Haggadah or the prayer book, like, what it's supposed to look like and blah, blah, mm-hmm. blah. But for the like, fun food, yeah, it was mostly just Indian food. And Bene Israeli Jews are allowed to eat rice, which I know, I don't know if your family as Ashkenazi Jews do, but we're allowed to also eat rice. So that also thankfully helps us and we can eat mostly everything.
I'm not going to lie, I'm pretty jealous. Like, I would much rather have the food at your house than the food at mine. And it's really because Ashkenazi Jews are just, like, not known for, like, incredible food. They will say their food is incredible, but the tea is that I would much, much rather go to your house, hang out with your grandma, eat there. So,
yeah. I mean, it also, for folks to understand, like, Ashkenazi Jews have also had an interesting history, which is why their food is like this, where there are a lot of them lived in shtetls mm-hmm. or, you know, little villages, and there was a lot of prosecution. I mean, for most Jews everywhere, but especially Ashkenazi Jews, there's a lot of, like, troubled history, which is why a lot of their food, dictates or is dictated by that history.
Right.
That's why I don't want to, like, sound like, oh, I'm just, like, dogging on it so much. But it's just, I understand why. But, yeah, it's not the most flavorful. And I don't know that they had access when this food was kind of.
That makes sense.
Showing up first.
Yeah, and then but so now, much about yeah. Judaism is religion. So much about Judaism culture. Is tradition.
Yes.
So it's, you know, it's. The tradition of it. So it's like that's kind of what we're learning on this, like, car ride to Boris and Minka's. It's we got Angelica and her family coming. There's a kerfuffle about with the Sultan of Brunei.
Yes. And Angelica, like, all she wants is presents, and she's trying to yes. ask the meaning of Passover, but, like, neither of her parents really know. Neither of them are Jewish, but they were just, like, yeah. invited as, like, a, you know, like, oh, why don't you guys come too type of thing, which mm-hmm. I love. I thought that was so nice that, like, I mean, yeah, like, Chucky and Charles are there, you know what I mean? Like, Chaz is there. They, like, they invited other people to kind of celebrate with them, which I thought was really nice.
Yeah, yeah. And then we mentioned earlier how Stu and Dee Dee are, like, are coming, and they're having, like, their little conversation, as, like, couples do when they're on their way to family functions, mm-hmm. of, like, there's always a complainer. We're like, ugh, like, I can't, like, we gotta get out of here early, blah, blah, blah.
Oh,
blah.
Yeah, there's always, like, the discussion on the way to, like, a family event where it's like, if mm-hmm. I do this, that means it's time to go. Like, if I make this signal, that means we're out, skis. And you know that, right. like, Stu is my dad in this situation where, like, he doesn't want to go to the family thing, but even if it's his own family, which in this case it's not. And Dee Dee is like, listen, it's tradition. We have to go. It's Passover. And she's, like, really excited. And it's, you know, it's Passover. It's meaningful. If it's so meaningful, why aren't there presents? How old are you, Stu? How old are you?
He is a toy inventor.
Ugh.
Yeah.
Peter Pan.
As old as Angelica.
Yes.
No, it's just so funny because it's it's so capitalistic, right? Like every holiday has become capitalistic. Yes. Even Hanukkah, right? Like the commercialization of all of it. Even though Hanukkah is not even such a big holiday for Jews.
Nope.
But and I know y'all talked about this, but it's so funny because he was like, "Where's the presents?" And I was like, "No, sometimes holidays, I don't know if this is because I lived in India, I know Hindu holidays at least, like they aren't, like sometimes it really is about the meaning and like being together. Like that's way more important than a lot of this like other commercialized, like whatever comes with it, like shirts and this and that, which are cute. And like I'm into it. I own ugly sweaters too, but it's an interesting piece definitely when I moved to America to see like how holidays have become versus like in where I grew up in India where it wasn't so siloed, right? Like everyone celebrates everything and you go to whoever's house and, you know, you can eat whatever. Like that's the point of it. And so, so I was just like, Stu, shut up. Yeah. Like just get over
it. It's really frustrating. And I think, I mean, obviously things haven't, we'd hope things would change and it wouldn't be all about the presents and all about the like buying things and throwing decorations up, which is fun and it's nice and I enjoy doing it. But I agree, like especially this past year with COVID and everything, like a lot of people not being able to see their families on special holidays, who gives a shit about the presents? Like that, to me, that was like, you know, I mean, not that I love presents. I love giving and receiving presents, but like not being able to see your family properly or sit inside in front of a Christmas tree on Christmas. I mean, that was like the heartbreak. It's not that, oh, I didn't get that, you know, whatever I wanted for Christmas. It was just, it's the tradition. And like, I couldn't bake Christmas cookies with my mom this year. And we always do that. And like, that's not even like, that's nothing to do with presents. That's just the tradition of like something that you do on a holiday. So I think like, especially that really came to me in this episode when it's like, Dee Dee's like, no, this is Passover. Like, this is tradition. This is what my family does. And everything Stu did just got on my nerves because it was disrespectful. Like, and I understand not, like, maybe you think it's boring, Stu, but like, respect that, like, that's Dee Dee's family and that's her tradition, you know? And I know it's not your thing, but you have your thing. You know what I mean? You get Christmas.
Yeah. That's true.
And like, she puts up with so much from him, right? Like, every single episode is something breaking down, something blowing up. So, you know, like, so, he's always wild and doing something crazy. So you can put up with this, my guy. Like, come on. Mm-hmm.
Great points. Great points. I see what you're saying, especially the lack of enthusiasm when he has to talk about he has the Torah, the Seder plate, and he's, you know, giving no emotion, giving no passion.
That's an honor, in my opinion. Like, that's a huge honor as someone who's, like, not even Jewish to be given that opportunity. Like, have fun with it. You know what I mean? Like, it's as exciting as you make it, in my opinion. If you're going to have to read it anyway, put some freaking oomph in it. You know, he's so bland.
That's true. About
it.
Obviously, he's not a Leo. Obviously, he's not making it a big story.
Excuse me, attention, right here. God. Let me read.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Sorry. Go ahead.
No, after you.
No, here's my like biggest issue with. This is like annoying, I know, but like with Jews in general, like our stuff does not have to be so boring. Like, why do we make it so boring? Like, you know, it's just there's like the story is so beautiful and you could see like everyone was really into it when Boris started telling it. So one, it's like I want us, you know, as a collective people to figure out how to, you know, be more comfortable with our like truth and our like stories and our traditions, rather, maybe I should say, because it doesn't need to be so boring. Like, I don't speak any Hebrew at all. And, you know, I ran multiple seders and they were about social justice because, you know, that's what college students also are passionate about. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm passionate about. So seders, interestingly, are something you can actually like pick and play and pick and choose, like, you know, what parts you want to highlight over others and what parts you can kind of cut out or go, you know, go quickly. So it's just, this is like my real gripe though. So I understand, Sarah, also your point, you know, with why like it is boring and there have, you know, it is like so dragging, especially when you're reading the story. You're just like, my God, I've like the fifth time, like, you know, I know it. I don't need to say it out loud.
Right.
Yeah. So how do we make it fun? Like, let the kids, you know, make up a whole story. Like, I had college students, I said, you know, make the story 21st century, like mm-hmm. make it something funny. Hmm. And yeah, and they were like texting the plagues, and you know, the plagues became modern where, you know, no Wi-Fi and like ghosting and you know.
That's
like,
funny. That's
those
funny.
Became the plagues.
Yeah.
And to me, that's what I wish like Jews in general could yeah. do. Maybe this is should be my next job. No, I'm just kidding. But you know, how do I help Jewish families? Like make it more fun. But
no, that sounds really amazing. I think that it's just probably, I mean, it's great to keep tradition. It's great to, the whole point is like, you know, remembering our past and our history and retelling it for generations to come. But yeah, like maybe we need to like, you know, rebrand Passover. Passover needs a PR team.
Yes.
So yeah. I think that's a great point. I do. And honestly, maybe my biggest issue was really the my family Seder. I've never been to a separate Seder than my own family. Yeah. So maybe if I, you know, went to a different family, maybe I would not have ops yeah. with Passover.
And I think it's...
No. I think your stuff is valid. I want to name it. Like, a lot of folks feel that way. Mm-hmm. Like, and I think I did too before I got to control it. I think
that's what it is, though. Like, when a certain tradition, especially maybe one that isn't really enticing, is kind of forced on you over time, I feel like it's very a natural inclination to kind of rebel against it and want to do something different. And I think that's the best part about traditions, is you can mold and shape them. You know what I mean? And obviously religion is kind of a touchy thing in terms of tradition, because, oh, this is the way it's always been done and this is how we do it. But I like the idea of like updating it as time moves on, because everything needs to be yeah. updated in the world at yeah. some point.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs, so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
The future is a hefty responsibility, and not one that we take lightly. But then, taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
I think that's a good point. Yeah.
And I love too. So like we talked about how like Chaz and Chucky are there. And even like Charles says like, oh, I don't follow a religion, but thank you for including me. I love mm-hmm. that about this show, that like they have, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? Like Dee Dee is Jewish and Chaz is maybe like, I guess you could say agnostic or, you know, atheist or something like that. And mm-hmm. we know they celebrate Christmas, so there's at least some Christianity in there. And just kind of having everybody represented in this one episode and kind of come together to celebrate Passover, I really, really liked. And then we get to the point yeah. where Chucky and Tommy want to go find toys. So they break out and go to the attic, and Angelica lets them out because Passover is about freedom.
Yeah. I mean, Angelica's like, you know, one for the people in this episode in a way.
In you one know, way.
in some ways.
Not in all the ways. She really connects with the yeah. Pharaoh in a really not great way.
She's a mess. I yeah. love this. I also thought it was really funny because I also made that note. Like, have Angelica ever been nice to the babies? Like, be confused.
Maybe, like, very rarely, and maybe it's only on holidays. Like, that's her tradition.
Yeah, yeah, maybe.
Or that's true.
Or when she's about to move away, or when she feels, oh, like, threatened, yeah. Yeah. or...
Like, when she just gets bored, you know,
when she needs them, yeah.
When it serves her well,
yes, that's true. That's true.
Yeah, Angelica really is like a boss bee. You have like your characters like Helga Pataki from Hey Arnold, and like all these like blonde boss bees. Honestly,
I mean, I'm not gonna lie. Like, I mean, the Angelica's mom might be like busy and like an HBIC, but at least it's like she's a CEO. Like, you know, she's like commanding, like she's awesome in a way, but maybe needs to spend more time with her daughter. But that's, you know, it's hard to balance all the plates. So the babies and Angelica go upstairs to the attic, and guess who's there? Grandpa Boris, because him and Minka got into a fight over the wine glasses, which wine glasses to use, and he got locked up there. And then the babies and Angelica got locked up there with Grandpa Boris as well.
Yep. So then he's like, oh, sit down, everybody. I'll tell you the story of Passover and the Egyptians and the Hebrews. And I loved this part. I mean, it really was reminiscent of like the Hanukkah episode, where it's again Boris like telling the story to the babies. And I love the spin on it, where they have like the babies are the Hebrews, and Angelica is obviously the Pharaoh, as she must be, as is destined.
And I appreciate she also changed the gender of Pharaoh. She's like, so can Pharaoh be a girl? And like, Boris doesn't even bat an eye, and he's like, sure, okay, great. Whatever, let's move on. Like, who cares? Cleopatra, hello. But oh my god, that was just such a like funny, sweet moment where Angelica, you could tell, because I think I don't know which, but this line has stuck with me. I probably will for the rest of my life, where Angelica's mom, Charlotte, says, right, like, if I want my daughter to be the CEO of a Fortune 500 company by the time something, like, she needs to be, like, eating and breathing self-esteem, I think. And, girl, you did it. Because look at Angelica.
She has confidence in spades. She has self-esteem out the wazoo. Like, that's what I appreciate about Charlotte as a character, being that she is a CEO. She is a boss bitch. Like, it's not Drew that is the one doing that. It is her. And then you have Angelica, who, like, she can be problematic and, like, a bully. But she does have self-esteem and confidence, which is great, you know, because then you have your characters like Chucky, who maybe he's lacking a little bit in that department. And then eventually kind of like everybody gets stuck up in the attic with Boris. Meanwhile, like Stu is trying to read the whole thing for Seder, and he gets an argument with Dee Dee about whether it's herb or herb. And everybody eventually just gets like bored and is like, I'll go find the kids.
Because, you know, like we said before, Stu's like putting no passion into the Seder. He is very monotone. He doesn't want to be there. Then you get like the awkwardness of him and Dee Dee like fighting, which is pretty, you know,
it's standard for a holiday.
It's standard for a holiday. Exactly. So not surprising, feels like home to me. Everybody gets locked up in the attic. Nobody is listening when they say don't close the door. I would be pretty irritated. I'd be like, please, just like, before you say anything to me, prop the door open, please.
I would like be running to I know Grandpa Boris probably can't run so fast, but like, I'd be like, no, you stay right there, don't move. Like, I'm getting out of here first, you know. Like, screw y'all.
And there was no like banging on the attic door. No. Like, open up. Yeah. They're like, oh, you're telling a story? We're just gonna like sit down and we're okay. We're okay with being locked. It's fine.
Oh my god.
Yeah, you'd think that Boris, when he got locked up there alone, would have been like banging on the door to get out, but I guess he's too chill. He's fine with it, I guess. And then he goes, so he's talking through the story, and we kind of talked through a little bit of the story earlier. And when Moses returns, he wants the Pharaoh to let the Hebrews free, or he's going to, like, send all these plagues. And then you see, I love the kind of, what is it called, where they're going through all the different plagues on the show, where there's like the frogs and the lice, the darkness, then there's vile beasts and locusts.
We're missing some plagues, right, Sasha? Which ones are we're missing about five plagues.
Oh my goodness.
There's 10 plagues.
That's a lot.
Yeah. So
the we missed Boyles, which I understand.
Oh,
why.
God, no.
I don't know that we wanted to see that.
Yeah, no Boyles. Hail and Fire.
Easy to show.
And Fire.
There was actually Hail pieces, but they didn't. They didn't say Hail.
Got it. Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Who else are we missing here?
Let me see. Hold on. Yeah. So we had Frogs, Lice, Darkness. One, two, three. We had five, mm-hmm. and six was the firstborn. Unfortunately, but
they
said
so
that's six, and then yeah. four was yeah, Hail, Fire, Boyles, and one more.
Oh my goodness.
I can't remember.
Yeah, it was a tough time.
Yeah.
For
yeah. Yeah. So basically, like Pharaoh promises to let Hebrews go if Moses stops the plagues.
Oh. Here I got one it? That's pretty creepy. Water turning into blood. Not fun.
Oh, that was a plague?
I'm glad what? That they didn't show that on
According
Rugrats.
To this
oh, yeah,
list.
Blood is the first one. Yes.
Goodness gracious.
Yeah, oh yeah my so gosh. That makes sense why we didn't cover that. They said, like, they didn't say, like, you know, it's the killing of the firstborn, but they
insinuate
left that part
that
out.
That is, like, what, I mean, we all know what's happening.
Yeah.
So basically, like, the Pharaoh lets Moses and says that, like, oh, if you stop the plagues, I'll let the Hebrews go. So they're all, like, prepping to leave. And then Pharaoh changes his mind and is like, nope, everybody has to stay. So Moses is, like, pissed. He's like, you better let them go or tomorrow's going to be real bad.
See, yeah, Jessica should lead a Seder.
I got
like,
it.
Look at her.
Yeah, listen, I got the pizzazz. Her. I have the pizzazz. I might not know all the details, but I have the showmanship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just play this at your next Seder. You're done. Dianu. Like, this would have been enough.
So Moses is, like, really pissed. And he's like, you better let the Hebrews go or tomorrow's going to be really bad. And the final plague is the firstborn of every Egyptian household will be, they have taken away. But, like, we all know it's mm-hmm. killed. And
right.
So my question for you guys. So the whole thing is with the Hebrews, they have to mark their doors so that the plague will skip the Hebrews' doors, right? So that's it right. will pass over the Hebrews' doors.
Yeah.
So what was it, just paint? Is that what they were using?
No.
Was it blood?
Sacrificial lamb.
Oh, I knew it was going to be blood. Oh, I knew it was.
Yeah, so it's yeah, blood. It's, and yeah. And that's why we have a shank on our Seder plate to represent the sacrificial
gotcha.
Lamb.
Okay. And so this plague, so like just so I understand, because plagues are like kind of like mystical in nature, right? So it's not mm-hmm. like there are people breaking down the doors and like stealing babies out of cribs
no,
or something.
No.
This is like a thing.
No,
so
it's
you are to like know or I think assume. So first, I think first and most important piece is that like, yeah, so when Moses runs away, right, like he is like when he's in becomes a shepherd with the
yes.
Midians, he actually like doesn't want to do this. Moses, interestingly, also had a stutter, so he never wanted to speak. And he actually doesn't speak. Aaron, his brother, does all the speaking for him, which is why I think Chucky's there with Moses all the
Got
time.
It.
But imagine if they were actually flipped when it came to at least elocution.
Okay.
Not like necessarily fear or bravery, but just like speaking wise. Moses had a stutter, so he never wanted to do this. So God said, I will work through you and this staff.
Mm.
So it was
oh, yeah,
never
he turns
like
the staff into a snake. Okay.
Yeah, yep. into a yep. snake. Exactly. So it was never Moses or it's never like Aaron. It's never one person. It's always God, but God just like doesn't come down to speak. Or Moses actually is the only person, I believe, that God spoke to one-on-one. I think in the whole Torah as well. I don't even think through Abraham. I think Abraham met angels. So anyway, yeah. So it's not people. It's like God kind of putting this
Got
like
it.
Mist. I think mist is the best way to describe it because it's just like the spirit or the angel
yeah.
of death.
Yeah, I'm not trying to make it seem like
over.
Witchcraft or anything, but it is
yeah,
like
no,
it's
no,
not
no,
like a physical person
yes,
like
it's
going
mystical
in.
For
yeah.
sure.
Yeah, it's a mystical force. It's like yeah. it's the angel of death
right.
that is going from door to door.
Right.
So
and I this is the yeah. scene that I really loved because they did like modernize it where like you have Angelica as the Pharaoh like using the phone that has like the Egyptian on it and calling her dad and being like, I'm daddy, am I the firstborn? Like
Yeah. It was only children, God. Though, right? It wasn't like you weren't like an adult and like you're a firstborn.
It was firstborn sons, actually. Yeah. So I appreciate like how they made that like children. But yeah, it's usually unfortunately firstborn sons. And I think because Pharaoh actually had a son who does die, unfortunately. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So yeah, not so hot, no. Jews. That was wrong on you. Yeah, so it's an interesting piece. Also, like, Indian Jews still do this. Like, they will, like, the kosher. My grandpa actually used to cut kosher meat for the town. So they, like, sell these, like, handprints that you put over your door.
Oh, that's very cool.
Yeah, so it's still a thing.
Was it, like a sticker?
No, it's a literal, like, just piece of paper that, you know, some, like, the rabbi will, like, put his, you know, dip his hand in the blood and then put it on the paper and then you sell the paper. Yeah.
That's really
And then
cool.
It's just, like, a literal hand over your house.
That's so cool. Yeah. That's very interesting. Love this, so I love this part of the episode because it is, like, they modernize it and they make it kind of, like, cutesy for what it really is. But they do a good job. Like you said, like, maybe it wasn't, you know, the Pharaoh wouldn't have gotten taken because he's an adult. But I like how they kind of modernized it and tweaked the story just a little bit just to make it kind of work within. And, right. So then the Pharaoh hears knocking and is, like, terrified of being taken away. So he runs to Moses and is like, okay, fine. I'll let you go. Just, like, stop the plagues. And this is when we get the Tommy and Chucky scene with the bread and how there's no yeast in it. And so that's how they discovered matzah. And I love Angelica being like, that's why we can't have cookies.
Yeah. I also love that Chucky wipes off the red paint.
Oh, yeah. And he's like, okay. Oh. He's like, there's some stuff on your door.
Yeah. I got it. Don't worry.
I wiped it off.
Yes.
And if Chucky's supposed to be second in command, which he always is, more than likely, like, I was like, wouldn't you know this? Like,
you think he should know. Sweet, yeah.
Yeah, a moment.
So innocent. Little Chucky.
Yeah, Tommy doesn't give Chucky the lowdown very well.
No, doesn't look like it.
Also, where are the twins?
They weren't invited.
We see the twins a little bit.
Well, they were.
But why were they?
They were there, like, in the story.
I know.
They weren't. Maybe they just, like, well, I want to say, I want to say that they're Catholic. Like, I want to say they are, but I'm not positive on that. And maybe that's why, although you'd think they would still invite them anyway. And there's nothing saying that Catholics can't go to Passover.
Yeah. Justice for the twins. We need them too.
I know. Maybe they're just keeping it, like, really tight. I don't know. That is a good question. I don't know why they weren't there.
Keep it tight.
So then, of course, you have, like, the Pharaoh having second thoughts about releasing all the slaves again. It's like, we've been here and done this before, but, you know, we saw what happened last time, but you do you, Pharaoh. And because basically what happens is Angelica asks for, like, Reptar cereal and, you know, oh, you gave away the slave that brings me that. And my favorite line, and I actually got this line because I'm an adult now, and she's like, you threw out the baby with the bathwater? And I was like, ha-ha.
That was good. That was a good one, Angelica.
It was so good.
She had a few of these. She had the, what was the Dirty Harry line when they first came?
The Dirty Harry, when they first got to...
When she met Moses / Tommy for the first time. Wait, I wrote it down. Anyway, we can come back to it because I wrote it down.
I'm trying to remember because, yes.
Oh, my God, not me. Oh, yeah, go ahead. Make my day. She says that to... the Pharaoh says that to Moses. Like, go ahead, make my day. And then the plagues start.
Yep. Oh, it was so good. And then, like, so then Pharaoh goes to catch up to the Hebrews all leaving. And then we have the famous ocean sea. Like, even I know this much, right? Where he parts the sea and all the Hebrews are leaving. And then, of course, the Pharaoh's chasing after him. And then, whoosh, water everywhere.
Yeah, I'm telling you, I am entranced by your story, Jessica.
I wish that the problem is with podcasting, it's like, it's a very, you know, it's obviously an audio medium, and no one can see, like, the fantastic arm movements that are happening.
Yeah, she's got those arm movements a-going. Yeah,
you'd think I was Italian by how much I move my arms around, but I'm truly not.
Yeah. Yeah, there's some passion with the arms. She is nearly one of those, like, airplane directors on.
Jessica would be on the other side of the Red Sea. Like, come this way. Come this way.
You know, someone actually probably had to do that because this is the same crew that then once they get to the other side gets lost for 40, like, what years? I would have to say 40 days. 40 years.
Traveling in Egypt to Israel. Come on now.
These poor Hebrews. Come on. They've been through it.
You know, they brought it on themselves, unfortunately. But
yeah, where's the GPS? Like, let's go.
Oh, my God. God was like, not today. Your GPS is done.
Yeah, it's rough. I would not be one of hanging out in the desert for 40 years. I'd be like, I quit. You know what? Like, I'll just go. No, I'm just joking.
They did say that.
They
did say that. And that's when God was like, definitely not. So that's why they did actually allegedly, like, stay, I think, 40 years because they wanted that generation, unfortunately, that had that enslaved mentality because they started saying, like, oh, we had it so much easier in Egypt.
Oh, God.
To, like, leave and not enter, like, the promised land.
Yeah.
So it's really sad. Very vengeful.
Yeah, it ends up much like a nicer ending in the show in that they're all free and they did it. And the Pharaoh gets, like, wiped away with the water. And then everybody manages to get out of the attic and go get some matzo ball soup. Actually, they're going to do that. Yeah. And then the door closes again.
Yeah. Yeah. So now everybody's stuck up there. And I don't know what they're going to do now. Like,
I mean,
come on.
Stu is an inventor. If he can't find a way to get a freaking door open, seriously, revoke your inventor's license.
I got to be honest with you. If there's one screwdriver up there in the entire attic, they are free.
Well, also,
they're
it
fine.
Seems like, honestly, like, you wouldn't pass your inspection if you had a door like that in your attic because that's a serious life safety issue. Like, you should be able to have egress.
I am concerned. Yeah.
I don't think anyone's looking.
I know. They probably had that house for like 50 years or more.
Oh, and one of the underrated parts of the episode we didn't really get into because it's not super relevant is every single time that Boris's name is mentioned, Minka just like loses her mind.
Oh, no, Boris. I know.
But then she was so shady. And like, I mean this in the best way. Like, she was reading him to Phil. She was like, oh, you want to wash your hands at the Seder? How about you wash these cups?
Yeah. Look at how spotty they are.
Yeah, Minka queen. And then all of a sudden she lost it. And like, you could tell that they obviously just really love each other because he also was like, oh, I was acting stupid.
Yeah,
like,
he realizes it. Yeah.
Wine glasses. But it was just so funny because I was like, you were dragging him a scene ago and now you're crying. Yeah. Like, this is so funny.
Oh, question, because when Boris is talking to the kids up in the attic, like, this is early on, he says, I'm assuming it's like Yiddish or something. It sounds like he says it in frustration. And I think it was like Hasarum or something like that. No. Okay. I was wondering if you guys knew what that was. I could have written it down incorrectly. I'm not sure exactly what he said, but I was just curious because I know that there were some like Yiddish words that I didn't know in the Hanukkah episode. I don't know what it was then. Maybe somebody listening could tell me what it was. I thought it sounded like he said Hasarum. I wrote H-A-Z-E-R-U-M, yeah. But I, you know, that was just me trying to write it phonetically.
Yeah, I've never heard it, but I also, again, like, don't speak Yiddish, so could not tell you. But
yeah, I hope Bubby is not like mad at me for not knowing what that is. She might
Okay, so the Hatserim looks like it's a kibbutz, like a name of a kibbutz or like a farmyard the Negev Desert or in Israel.
So maybe that's what he said.
So I don't know. Yeah, so I don't know if that's what he was talking about, but
interesting.
No idea.
I stayed in a kibbutz when I went to Israel. That was a part of our itinerary, and that was an awesome experience. There were, you know, it was like a big open like area with tons of little houses, and you know, they work together. That's the point of a kibbutz. That's like a mini community, and everybody works together to like have their own community and neighborhood, and like there's like people that volunteer for cooking and like all this stuff. It was a great experience. It was like, felt like I guess like a comparable, it's not comparable, but it, you know how like when
you're dorming at college and there's like all these little buildings and then you have like your center courtyard and you're like all hanging out with each other. It has like that same feeling in a way.
Yeah.
Of community. Just like having your own little, you know.
It's, and I this is positive, but like, yeah, it's like socialist, right? Where everyone works for the same goal. And and it's like, again, not in a cult way, but like a combine, you know, where like everyone works together and everyone can leave. Like, I want to make that clear, but it's just, it's that like
I'm not still there. I was able to leave. That's true.
Same. I was like, I've been to a few kibbutz as well.
But I just think that like the legacy that Rugrats created with their Passover episode, with their Hanukkah episode, I think it was just, once again, I think it was so many people's first exposure to not only Judaism, but like definitely Passover, definitely Hanukkah, which I really appreciate. You know, another episode that Nickelodeon did was Harold's Bar Mitzvah and Hey Arnold, which was, I think I've spoken about before, but, you know, seeing Harold like prepare for his Bar Mitzvah was like, you know, for me, who also had to do that, and it's a very stressful thing as well. It's just great seeing that representation in media, in cartoons meant for children, but also adults could appreciate it as well.
Yeah, especially because it's so easy for them to do just like a Christmas episode or an Easter episode or something where like it's super common to have those types of things available. So I love that they did something different again, especially because it was the 90s and this wasn't commonplace for a show to do this. It did help kids. I mean, in both regards, right? Like it helped Jewish kids, like you say, like be like, wow, that's me. Like I'm on TV. And also like me, like, oh, I didn't know that even existed because I certainly wasn't exposed to it as a kid. It's great. Yeah. I wish more shows did this when we were kids.
Yeah, and they were actually asked to do a Hanukkah special, and I think the writers decided that, no, we're going to actually pitch Passover instead, which I thought is just such a beautiful moment because, one, Passover is way more important than Hanukkah. And then they ended up doing Hanukkah the next season. But this is why, they did Passover first is because I think, and I rightfully so, I think is a little bit more important when, you know, if you were to ever rank the Jewish holidays. And it's really, like, it was just a beautiful moment. Even now where, you know, we're just able to say that we had representation that wasn't just, like, the Jewish Christmas. Even though, like, Boris had a menorah behind him the whole time, which was really weird. Or Hanukkah, which I was like, okay. Like, no one just has them laying around, I don't think.
Well, actually, I know like a couple of like, so I'm in design and I've known a couple of families that I've worked for that have a like menorah collection and they it for like decor. So maybe they're Hanukkah enthusiasts over at Bora Mika's house. They keep it out all year long for decor.
Hey, if that was like an actual gold one, yes, they definitely should because that's worth the money.
Yeah, so you better get your money's worth. My God.
Yeah, they keep it next to the kiddish cup. So
right.
But I do appreciate it. We get into some of the history of how these episodes came to be on our Rugrats Hanukkah episode, as well as some critiques that, you know, were thrown their way about being stereotypical. They had the Anti-Defamation League. There was a bit of a controversy about a comic that was written. So unless, Sasha, you want to touch on that at all, I would suggest we had a really great conversation with Mike Bloom about it back in December with our Rugrats Hanukkah episode. So if you liked this and you haven't listened to that episode, go back and listen. It was a lot of fun.
And we talked about our Hanukkah traditions in that episode. So
yeah, I learned a lot in that episode too. I love these because I get to learn so much. Like, honestly, I don't know a lot of it. And even if I did learn it once upon a time, as you become an adult, your brain kind of loses some stuff because it has to make room for other things. So I appreciate learning everything about it. And you guys were like so great with explaining everything. I mean, I hope that obviously – and anybody who's Jewish probably knows exactly what you're talking about with everything in Passover. But hopefully anybody who's not learned a little bit as well. And maybe not even just watching the episode, but listening to us talk about it. Because it was so much fun to talk about this and kind of have the Rugrats version of Passover.
Yeah. Yeah. And as a tradition, just double checking Sasha's Twitter to see if she has tweeted about Rugrats Passover in the past.
No.
Or Rugrats in general. No, doesn't seem like that Sasha has tweeted about Rugrats.
I love how what this a shame. Is tradition.
Nothing. No tweets about Rugrats in her history. Oh, but if there was a tweet, I would have found it.
I like can't breathe because I know exactly what you're talking about. It's just so funny.
Yeah, if you don't know, once again, God. Go back to our Hanukkah episode. I found like a plethora of Rugrats tweets that Mike Bloom had tweeted over the years, backdating from 2013.
Oh my
God. He is a Rugrats enthusiast and cat dog. Let's just double check.
Cat dog.
Cat.
Thing.
Yes. Let's double check, Sasha. Do you have an affinity for cat dog?
I wonder if I tweet because I definitely didn't agree.
You've never tweeted about cat dog.
No, I don't think I tweeted. Yeah, but I liked cat dog. So
cat dog was
I
great.
Definitely went. I was hearing y'all. I was like, oh, I don't think Mike Bloom, right? Mike didn't like it, I think. I can't remember.
There was a but finale was like, he didn't cool. like, I think is what it was, or something yeah. like that. I think is he didn't like the finale for some reason, I think. Hot takes from Mike Bloom.
Oh, yeah. Gosh. Yeah. I no. can't. Yeah, no cat dog tweets, but, you know, maybe one day you'll tweet about cat dog or Rugrats.
Well, yeah, now that they have that new one coming out on Nickelodeon, yes. The creepy looking one.
Yes, yes.
Creeps me out, man.
I wonder if there's any updates about the new Rugrats on revival.
Plus, right? Yeah.
Reboot. Is it on Paramount Plus, too?
Oh, yeah, we should have said that. If anybody... It's slated to premiere on Paramount Plus around this spring. Yeah. Look at that. Mm-hmm. Spring 2021. Yeah. We're coming up. I mean, we're in spring now, I think.
Yeah,
I think
yeah,
so.
Yeah, we should have said at the beginning, if you wanted to watch the episode and you didn't get a chance, it's on Paramount Plus. That's how we all watched it before.
I watched it on Hulu. And
yeah,
I watched it on Hulu.
Oh, okay. So, yeah it's also on Hulu. So, if you – Paramount Plus or Hulu is where you can get it. It's season 3. I think it's episode 23. Sometimes Wikipedia says 26, but we know it's in that vicinity, so you should be able to find it.
Yeah.
But yeah. Yeah. No, it looks like it's coming 2021 spring, so it's coming up soon. It kind of creeps me out, gotta be honest, but...
I don't know how I feel about...
I might watch a little bit of it just because I'm kind of curious.
No, I'm definitely curious. I'm definitely going to check it out.
I mean, the theme song is iconic. If they change it, I'll be very devastated, just like I was with Dawson's Creek, just saying.
Oh, God. Okay. Why did they choose this animation style? It's cursed.
It's very creepy. They look boxy.
Yeah, it's really bad.
Look at poor Dee Dee. What did they do to her? Ugh. I feel bad.
Yeah. It's funny because the outfits, the vibes, the like animation is all back in style actually. So that's why I thought it was funny that they're trying to modernize it because the 90s are actually back and nostalgia right sells. So why are they trying to kill it? Like you ruin everything. Like that's my question.
100%. I think there is a lot of nostalgia for the 90s right now because I think a lot of that stuff that we watched growing up, it's now available for streaming and people our age, I don't mean to age myself, but people my age are like pumping out babies and making them watch these shows, you know, so because they're like, oh, my gosh, I loved, you know, whatever, Rugrats, SpongeBob, who cares? And they'll throw it on for their kids to watch. Yeah. So it makes a lot of sense. I mean, I don't have any children because I'm the fountain of youth, but other people.
Same. I also don't. But if I were to have them, yes.
Yeah.
This would be what
they'd
be
you have to
watching.
Force them to watch the shows you liked and not whatever crappy new shows are on. Yes.
100%.
But yeah, so I'm curious to see this show when it eventually does come out. But yeah, so we'll have to, maybe we'll do like, we'll like intro one of our podcast episodes with like our thoughts on the Rugrats revival when it finally comes out.
Oh gosh. Yep. Yep. Really it's excited like, for that.
What are you watching this week, Jess? Oh, by the way, I watched Rugrats.
Yeah. It's like, what is this? 1997?
I can't wait to hear that.
Fun. But yes, any final thoughts on the Rugrats Passover episode? Anything we didn't get to that you wanted to talk about, Sasha?
No, I'm just, you know, one thank you to the both of you for letting me come on this. And you know, I'm so excited again, just representation. When y'all tweeted about it, you know, a few people ended up messaging me, you know, not like their stories, but just like their connection to this particular episode. And it was just so beautiful to watch and, you know, to hear their stories as well. Mm-hmm. And I am definitely like excited and, you know, cautiously optimistic. But I hope that, you know, my people like me, like, you know, Jews of color, especially, our stories get told a little bit. I don't know that our stories are getting told at all. So I understand in that moment, like, that wasn't a thing. So I'm excited for, you know, in this new future, we're hoping that representation, you know, is a little bit more, representative. I know that sounds cheesy as hell, but, you know, we hope that, yeah, it isn't just all matzo ball soup and gefilte fish, but, you know, some naan and curries and, you know, all the, like, beauty of the Jewish diaspora in general. So, you know, I'm looking forward to, like, that representation. But until then, you know, I'm thankful that we have Prince of Egypt and we have the Rugrats.
Yeah. Thank you so much, Sasha. I really appreciate your words on that and all the information. I did go to Hebrew school and I've retained absolutely minimal amounts of it. So having you being such like an educated person and, you know, really reminding me about what this holiday was all about, I really appreciate that. And, you know, being informative as well. And then, you know, like maybe I can come around to the Passover. Maybe I will throw my own Seder next year.
I can help you. Please.
And then for my new traditions and, you know, maybe Jessica, maybe you can come to my Passover Seder.
I would absolutely love it. That's what I think it's all Sasha. About. It's like it's forming your own traditions for your own in your own ways of doing things as an adult. Yeah. It's one of the best parts about being an adult is you get to decide what you want to do and whether or not you want to hold on to traditions that maybe aren't the best or maybe adapt them in your own way.
Sasha, if you ever want to come to the East Coast, then you're obviously invited to my Seder as well, which will just become your Seder, but that's fine. It's totally fine. God.
I love it. It's so weird because I didn't care about Judaism necessarily. I didn't care about Judaism as much as I did, I think. Once I became a professional Jew, I like to call myself now because I work for Jewish nonprofits. But it's really now I feel like I'm a geek and a nerd for it and I can talk about it all the time. So I'm glad I got to do this.
No, thank you so much for coming on. It really was a joy. Like it was great to have you here to kind of like inform my questions, especially like I don't know a lot of stuff about this. So I'm really happy that you were able to come on and talk to us about this episode. And obviously you're welcome back anytime. Anything you want to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
Completely welcome back to the podcast.
Thank you.
Open, yes, open invitation.
100%. What else do you have going on, Sasha? Where can people find you on Twitter and other social media?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at funsize_04. It's such a silly name, but whatever.
Surprised Rob hasn't gotten you to change it yet. It's only a matter of
he time. Calls me out all the time. Yeah. Like every time it would be like _04.
He has such a problem with the underscores.
Like, yeah, but I'm not like smart enough or witty enough to like come up with something else. So like if anyone out there has LMK. But anyway, and yeah, you can find me on Twitter and at Silent Podcasts on YouTube, where we are covering a few shows, but I'll be on for Temptation Island and the Challenge All-Stars or OGs, whatever the heck they're called now. Mm-hmm. Starting, I think, this Friday, we'll be covering that as well.
Exciting.
So check us out. Yeah, thanks.
So you can find us at Shit90s Pod on Twitter and Instagram. You can send us in feedback. Let us know if you have any Passover traditions or any thoughts at all. We still would love to hear at Shit90sPod at gmail.com. And then, you know, April is, we have this coming out in April as for bonus content. We have a couple things in the works coming up later in April that we're really excited about. And then aside from that, Boy Meets World, Dawson's Creek, of course. Yes. Jess, what's going on in your world?
In my world, we are still working on community building. We are still very early on. We are up to season one, episode 9, Debate 109, which is one of like my favorite or season one episodes. So give that a listen. That's obviously with Josh Wigler over on Post Show Recaps. If you want to give that a listen, greatly appreciate it. But we thank you all for joining us for this special bonus podcast. Happy Passover, everybody. If you celebrate, that's right. You can say, can I say happy Passover? Does the people say that? Yep. Okay, great. Happy Passover. See, I'm learning things. Happy Passover. Happy Easter if you celebrate it. Happy any holiday you're celebrating this week or any other time that you're listening to this podcast. Thank you so much, Sasha, for joining us. I hope everybody has a happy holiday and safe. Stay safe. Stay warm. Stay healthy. Have a good one. Bye.
Shit 90 shows taught me.
Welcome back to Shit 90 Shows Taught Me. I'm just not going to restart that. My voice cracked on the first thing. I saw Sarah flinch. I'm like, great. Well, I have to restart. Oh, God. It's a day.
I was like, oh, is that your, like, you know, we all have that voice that we put on?
That's your podcaster voice.
That's not. That is my sore throat voice, apparently. All right. Oh, my God. Let's try that again. We're off to a raging start already.
All right. Welcome to Shit
Edition. Let me just put my chain smoker voice on and prepare for the podcast.
Oh, my God. I'm dead.
Okay.
Oh, my God.
We're going to have this a blooper reel on this one.
That's what I was going to say. This just needs to be the outtake.
Okay.
All right. Oh, God. Okay.
I'm ready.
We're back.